You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
As Aussies, we love our sports, so it's only natural for us to want to spend as much time on the field as possible. Whether you're into cricket, AFL, golf, soccer, rugby union or league, a career in sports turf may just be calling you. In this episode, Marcus Addington, an operations supervisor for our sponsor GLG, gives us an insight into what it's like to work in this horticultural niche, including the day-to-day activities you'll be performing, career advice, and what it's like to work at GLG, the Green Life Group. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
It's going to be great. So, cast your mind back to when you were on the tools, Marcus. Mm-hmm. Can you paint us a bit of a picture about what a typical day looks like for a turfie?
So I suppose it would be different depending on where you were working. Obviously, with the turf, although you're working as a turfie, there's, I suppose, different sectors within that turf industry. So, you've obviously got sports fields, racetrack, you know, golf courses, bowling greens. There's a few different avenues you can go, but I'll just talk about the ones that I've done, I suppose. In the morning, you'd sort of come in and have a bit of a brief meeting about, I suppose, the works that you've got planned for the day. Where I was working early days is similar to where I'm working now. So working at a local council level, had multiple sports fields to look after. I think there's about 33 sites, and some of those sites have more than one ground. So you'd have a few things going on. You obviously have to get grounds cut, have to get, you know, depending on what time of the year it is, you'd be fertilizing, spraying, irrigation repairs. So there's a million and one jobs, I suppose, that you can do every day, sort of different, which was, I suppose, what I liked doing at the start, because it's not monotonous. You've always got something new to a new challenge. Yeah, there's no real, I suppose, typical day. At the moment, it probably is as typical as it gets through winter, because it's not growing as fast. You get a bit of into a rhythm with football and, you know, the winter sports, rugby and that in place now. So I suppose it's more about going out and having a look at any damage that may have occurred, if there's been weather over the weekend while they've been playing. Just, I suppose, a bit of auditing and stuff on the grounds early days in the week, and then highlighting any issues on the Monday, and then taking care of them during the week.
Depending on who's been tackled in the dirt and how hard.
Yeah, that's it.
So can you tell me about three projects that your team at GLG is actually working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few that I suppose are starting to, or have come to completion within the last week. Obviously, with the change of season now, from cricket being played to your winter sports in football, rugby, we've been covering all the – we've only got synthetic cricket pitches out here. We don't have natural turf ones in the local municipality. So we've been covering those with a synthetic, cover, for lack of a better word, just a pitch cover. Which is, goes on the back of a large tractor, and like they're rolled up on a spindle. The spindle goes into a rack that's on the back of the tractor, and you roll it out over the top of the cricket pitch, just so, if anyone does get tackled on those hard areas, and that it saves any damage of hitting a hard cricket pitch. Although the cover is still quite firm, there's a bit of protection for anyone getting tackled on there. And then following up from putting those down, just a bit of top dressing stuff around the edges, just so, if there's a little edge, because they've been rolled up for so long over the summer period, they can get a bit stretched, the synthetic covers. So normally if you have a rain event or a little bit of irrigation, you get some weight into the cover, it'll settle. But then we normally just run over the edges with a bit of top dressing, so no one, walks past and flicks the edge of their cover with their foot or anything like that, trips over. Just so you've got that even ground, from walking to the natural turf to the synthetic. That's a pretty large project. Obviously, we've only got a short window of changing, particularly to local level when you go from change of sport. You know, people are already training for football before cricket's finished and vice versa. So there's not really much time to get it done. You've really only got about a week and a half to cover, you know, 33 sites. It can be challenging, especially if there's weather involved and breakdowns and things like that. So that's one, which has gone down not too bad. We've had a few issues with a few covers that we got put down, which were vandalised within a couple of days. Just cut up and had to get a couple of new ones in. Before that happened, I suppose we had the spring renovations, which was completed. Depends on the site and what goes on at the site. They're sort of spread out through the entirety of spring. Normally, we try to get most of the grounds done towards the start into the middle of spring when the grass is starting to actively grow and leading into that summer period. So it's like the warm season grasses are ready to go. So spring renovations, normally we just spray out any sort of winter grass that we might have oversowed, couch grass or kaikuyu grass in winter, and then just give them a scarify, hollow tine, coring, top dressing, anything like that. Spray out any weeds, spray out any pre-emergent that we think grounds are showing signs of weeds popping up or have a history of weeds popping up. And then another one we've got, which was a primary school, which was handed, we took over this contract a couple of years ago, and when it was handed over, there was no irrigation, or there was irrigation in the ground, but it wasn't working. We've since got the irrigation up and running since we've taken over, but the ground was in pretty average state.
Yeah. Without irrigation.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a kaikuyu-based ground, and kaikuyu, when it doesn't have, I suppose, the right growing conditions, it grows really, I suppose, tufty and sparse, and it can create a pretty uneven surface. So it can be pretty dangerous with walking on it, running on it, because you can quite easily roll your ankle, that's been an ongoing sort of battle, just obviously trying to get work, being a primary school ground, and it's really the only area that they've got to get kids out and play their sports and stuff. We can really only do works on it during school holidays, which is difficult. So that's one that we've got some work going on at the moment, just turfing areas. We were going to top dress it with quite a large amount of sand, 150 cubic meters, but the rain last week sort of held that off because we can't actually get trucks in there to dump the sand because it's too wet. So we might be looking at doing that in the lead up to spring with some better conditions, hopefully. That's sort of the third one going on there, I suppose.
Yeah, great. So it sounds like in the sort of sector that you're working in, it's a lot of maintenance. Do you guys do much construction, or is that another crew that sort of handles that?
Yeah, so we don't have a construction side. Not to say that won't, I suppose, occur in the future. But as far as turf management goes with GLG, I suppose it's a bit raw. They do have obviously the management side, which is great to be involved with because, since I've been here, it's been all good. Everything's on board with all the ideas, and they're trying to get things rolling, and I suppose they never say no to a new initiative and take everyone's ideas on board. But construction is a different beast in itself. So I think we need to sort of get ourselves set, which we are now, I suppose, in the maintenance side of things, and then venture out to construction.
Yeah, I think that's clever, focusing on one thing rather than trying to be a master of everything. I think GLG is very well known for the maintenance side.
Yep, definitely.
And that's the brand. What factors do you take into account when making these maintenance decisions?
I mean, maintaining would probably go on the amount of use that we'd get, and obviously the type of turf species that is on that site. Also, I suppose the soil profile and drainage, irrigation, the thing with out here is every ground, you can't treat every ground the same. They're all completely different. They might have the same turf species on them, but they don't drain at the same rate. They don't have the same irrigation capabilities. Some grounds get more use than others. So it is difficult. That's why we do a lot of, I suppose, this turf supervisor does auditing at least once a fortnight to see where the grounds are at. And he'll go out and make his decisions off, you know, like he tries to plan obviously fortnightly or weekly the works that he's doing, and plan his works accordingly. We also liaise with the leisure department from the local council on which, you know, which grounds are, you know, showing high signs of wear or showing, you know, signs of going backwards in certain areas, things that might be foreseeable in the future as far as, you know, roping off a goal square so that people can't just go out there and have shots at the same end and just wear out one goal square, trying to spread the wear on grounds and things like that. And then I suppose making sure that the crew are on the same page so that we're all trying to work towards the same goals, which generally we are because we have the meetings in the morning to discuss what's happening, so everyone normally knows what's going on. Other challenges, I suppose, that we have at those venues is, as other than the clubs, it's just general public that are turning up. We also have school bookings on grounds. People that, you know, just go out and play golf. Obviously, you're not meant to, but it happens. So there's sort of challenges you deal with it. Factors that we're sort of taking into account is the one would definitely be the weather and the time of year when we're doing maintenance at the moment leading into winter. One thing we definitely keep an eye on is just how grounds are going with drainage. And football, obviously, there's a lot of wear through. There's the corridor of grounds, I suppose, from goal to goal. That's generally where teams train. A lot of local grounds, which I'm sure if anybody asks, any local municipality are overused because there's just a lack of, I suppose, areas for people to train. And then also just general public and schools and stuff using them as well. So there's a few different factors that we have to take into consideration when making maintenance decisions.
Sounds like it. So I think in gardening circles especially, a lot of people oversimplify soil. So we have this idea that, okay, black carbon-rich soil, you know, it's crumbly but it's heavy. This is what is sort of held up as the optimal soil, and I think that's an oversimplification. In episode 127, Alyssa Bryce mentioned that she talks about how soil is fit for purpose. Can you tell me a little bit about soils that you work with? Are they all the same depending on, you know, across all different sports turf, you know, needs, or is there some differentiation there? Can you tell me about soil?
Yeah, so I suppose it depends, again, on the level that you're at. Obviously, the local level with local government and stuff, they can't build grounds to the elite sort of level because they don't have the funds to maintain it at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be able to do the main grounds. When I say main grounds, they might have a premier sort of ground where they'll have a sport played out of that's at a higher level, which they can do, but they can't do all grounds. So if with soils, you generally get sand-based, in my opinion, is the best that you'll get, sand over gravel, obviously, for drainage and for the grass to take hold and easily have, you know, air, water. But the one thing you need to keep up to it with is nutrients. Obviously, the water's going to take the nutrients through the sand profile quicker than it would through a loamy clay profile. If you do have a loamier clay profile, which is more often out in local levels, there are benefits to having that as well. It holds on to your nutrients more, but when it gets rainy and wet, they get boggy, they hold the water, they can, you know, be uneven, it gets a lot more slippery. As if you've got a lower draining soil, you just got to try and make sure that you've got good surface drainage or subsurface drainage that's appropriate to the drainage rate. But I suppose, yeah, there's pros and cons to both sand and soil profiles. The soil profiles, at local level, I think there was a push for everyone to go towards that sandy profile for sports fields, but I don't think it's really necessary. I think if you go a sandy, loamy type profile a little bit heavier than your medium sort of sand, it's going to work better because you get that happy medium of holding onto your nutrients. Yes, it's going to drain slower than what an elite level is, but it's also not going to be expected to perform at an elite level. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it's a bit of horses for courses there.
Mm. As always, that's always the answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how do you deal with, I guess in Australia we've got some pretty harsh conditions from time to time, and I'm sure you've seen it. How do you deal with drought, and how do you deal with the other side, too much rain?
Yeah, yeah. So with drought's a difficult one, especially when we're in the height of the drought years back, because obviously there was water restrictions and stuff in place as well, and nothing in horticulture really performs overly great when there's a lack of water.
Nope.
So that was difficult. There was obviously some wetting agents and things being used in the soil profile for to hold onto nutrients and to try and keep the plants ticking along until they could get that, you know, deep watering. And then on the vice versa with the wetter conditions, again, I suppose it's about communications. A lot of clubs are, and like councils are good, and they understand that there's nothing we can do with wet weather. If the ground has a heavy profile, it's going to be wet. So there's again, if you've got the appropriate drainage, if you give the ground time, it will drain. So it's more about just being open and honest and saying, this is where the ground's at. This is what we would recommend for, you know, keeping the ground in its optimal condition. If you do train, which obviously sides are going to have to train at some time or play a game, then, you know, don't expect it to be 100%. But again, when they do train and they have to, that's just part and parcel of what the industry is. So we get out on the grounds and we may have to roll them just to get, you know, any footprints or low areas or areas that are holding water nice and level so that surface drainage can work. Obviously, if you get someone that stands on a wet area of a ground, they're going to leave a bit of a footprint, and that's going to leave a bit of a well for the water to sit in. So it won't drain anywhere if it's only got surface drainage. So then we'd need to either come across and top dress that to make it level, or wait for it to dry a little bit to run it over with a roller and then give it a light top dress to make it level so that it can have that surface drainage. You'd use a penetrant to get through the soil profile instead of trying to hold onto it. And some people, if they've got subsurface drainage that isn't adequate, some people make the mistake of running over the surface with a solid tine to open it up so that the water's got the chance to get off the top of the soil profile and get underneath, and it looks like it's gone. But all that's doing is wetting up the subsurface quicker, and once, if it rains again, it's just going to fill up quicker, and then not only do you have surface water, you've got subsurface water, so it's actually made it worse. So there's a few challenges there, and some people can fall into a little bit of a trap. I suppose if you've done your work and you know your sites, you should be all right. But there's a couple of things that you need to watch out for.
So when you say surface level draining, you're talking about just letting it roll off the top out to the sides?
Correct. Yeah. So normally if you have subsurface drainage, they'll be spaced apart at about 3 to 5 meters. But in that 3 to 5 meters, if you've got an area that's wet and boggy and it's got a low spot, or it's got foot wells that are full with water, it's not going to be able to drain to those that subsurface drainage that's spaced at 3 or 5 meters apart. So you need to have that area as level as you can, or even with a bit of a slight fall towards those that subsurface drainage, so the water has somewhere to go. Otherwise, it's just going to sit there and stagnate and start to stink, and then that's when the complaints come through.
Well, I guess it's also about, you were talking about managing expectations with your client too. It's about that communication, being like, look, these are the conditions, this is the budget you set, and these are going to be the issues, and we're just going to do this.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. And like a lot of, you know, the local level clubs, they understand that. They know that. They know that there's always going to be challenges. They know that there's going to be weather conditions. A lot of sites now, which out this way, they've got, particularly with soccer fields, they've got one natural turf and one synthetic turf, so that if they do have weather conditions, they can at least train on their synthetic ground, which I think is a good option. and then they play their weekend and their actual match games on the natural turf.
Can you tell us about one other interesting problem that you've encountered in your time in turf?
One other interesting problem. I suppose the main one I have, I suppose, is vandalism that just randomly occurs, which would be a big one, I'm sure, everywhere, but particularly at the local level. Like I was saying earlier, there was some pitch covers which weigh, like, they're very, very heavy, which rolled out, and I have no idea how they did it, but there must have been a group of 30 or 40 people that dragged it off the cricket pitch and played a game of cricket on there within days of us putting it down. So that was – I found that amazing that they were able to move it, because we had a 3 by 5 metre mat which was cut up the other week, and I tried to pick a little bit of it up and I couldn't move it at all. So there was that was an interesting and, I thought, humorous one. Not only that, but if at the same side, if they hadn't walked 100 metres in the other direction, there was another cricket pitch which hadn't been covered yet. So they could have just played over there, but it was what it was. Yeah.
I remember at our school there was someone who was just obsessed with taking plastic wheelie bins and setting them alight, and every time they'd try and clean it up as best they could, they'd just bring another one and do it again.
Yeah, there's some interesting, so you'd have melted plastic characters
everywhere.
Yeah, that's no good, definitely.
So do you have a favourite site?
I do, yeah. A few years ago now, I used to work at Melbourne Stadiums Limited, which the AFL bought when Melbourne Stadiums Limited run Etihad Stadium, well, now Marvel Stadium, I suppose. So I used to work out of there, and they've got a couple of training venues that they maintain, and I was a ground manager at Whit Noble, and I was the ground manager there when they first brought football back through the NAB Cup or NAB Challenge or whatever it's called now. So obviously being heavily involved with the project of getting the grounds from a training venue for 25 years to then up to the AFL standard. Not that the training venue there was far away from a playing standard, but just having that, being involved with that side at that time and seeing the excitement on everybody's face around the Western Bulldogs club about football coming back to that venue was really good. It was good to be involved with. Of course, that's changing at the moment now, because that ground and the whole site is being reconstructed at the moment. So there might be a different site now, so I might have to pick a new one. But that was definitely my favourite site. I suppose for a local site here, so obviously being at the city of Whittlesea, I like the Whittlesea Football Ground. It's a bit of a country setting. It's sort of a small town with it. It's got that country feel to it. You can park all around the grounds, which in today's sort of day and age is sort of going away, unless you go out to, you know, the actual country football. A lot of the local ones now, you can't park all the way around the ground, but at that one you can. It's a good size ground. It's got a bit of a loamy profile. It has its issues, but yeah, there's a agricultural show that's on there every year. There's challenges up there, but it's always good to be involved with. So that's probably my favourite site. Yeah,
love it.
Mm.
How has your life changed since you became a manager and stepped off the tools?
I suppose work-wise, it's, for me, I actually loved being hands-on and doing the work. It's difficult, not difficult. Oh, I find it difficult not to get out and get involved with it being hands-on. Just because I enjoyed it. I really, yeah, there's renovation time, although it's like your busiest time. That was what I loved. It's just what I love doing. So I like doing the work so that you can see what the end product's going to be. And then you can see how happy clubs are when you've done a good job. Dealing with, obviously it's not great when you get breakdowns and that, but dealing with the challenges on site when something does break down and trying to find out a new way to get around the issue and working, I suppose, as a team to get the best result. That's the sort of thing that I miss out on site. Now it's more about, I suppose, trying to bring everyone at that local level up to the level that I was working at the, I suppose, the elite level when I was working out of Marvel Stadium and Whitten Oval, which is good because, you know, there's been things here that we've been able to implement that, you know, they've never seen before. So, and to me, it was just basic, basic day-to-day knowledge. But, yeah, I suppose everywhere you go at that local level, they hadn't seen it done that way before. So, yeah, just the new equipment, opening people's eyes up to the new equipment that's out there. I like, obviously, reading some brochures and seeing what new things are out, going to the turf conferences and seeing new ideas, the new ways people are doing things. Yeah, speaking to people at other sites, seeing how they're going, what they're doing, how they do things. But, yeah, definitely for me is being that hands-on out on the site is probably the one thing I really miss. But, yeah, just trying to get everyone up to the level that we want to be at, which is probably where we're at now. It's good. We don't really have many issues with our client as far as sports fields and stuff. So if we don't get news from the client regarding the sports fields, which is good because we've got 75 sports fields to look after. So if we don't get feedback from them, then that's a good sign. So,
yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
So it sounds like nowadays it's all about the higher level stuff. It's about mentoring. It's about showing the way, and it's about spreading your knowledge amongst your team and then seeing everything you've learned through your career being passed on to the next group coming through.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. And I suppose having the opportunity to work at that elite level when I was a bit – well, when I say I was a bit younger, I'm not old, I'm only 35. So, yeah, it opened me up to meeting some new people and – you know, they're in the same situation as me now where they can't sort of work at that elite level because they've got young families. They want to be home on the weekends. They can't be, you know, working at games, you know, at the elite level. So I suppose it's good for me that I know people that if they're looking for work, I can introduce more people that have that elite level experience to this local level and help bring it up.
So can you tell me about, like, what first inspired you to get into turf care? So, you know, you've talked about how you've worked at Etihad or Marvel. Now you're in this sector. But what first got you into it?
It was probably because I'd played a lot of sport when I was younger. Not that I really had that avenue of, I suppose, in my mind of going into turf maintenance, but I knew I wanted to do something that was outdoors. I like being outdoors all the time as much as I can, so... I did try a Parks and Gardens apprenticeship before I tried this, and I liked it, but it wasn't for me. And then, yeah, one of my best mates was working for a company, and he said they had an opening for turf management, and I thought, yep, that sounds like a great opportunity, so gave it a go and loved it straight away. So it was being involved in sports without being directly involved with the sport. Was really good, especially when I was playing in the area that I was working, because I was able to take more pride in the work I was doing because I knew that I had to play on those grounds. So,
yeah.
I'd always try and do the best work that I could so that myself, I didn't get any hassle from any of my friends that I played footy with because something was wrong at a ground. And also, you know, you get to see your product every weekend because you're working on it, so.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I've heard a few turfies say that, you know, they were in sport, they're into sport, but they were never really interested in becoming an athlete, but they didn't want to give up that setting.
Yeah, no, it's always – and I feel the same about it today as when I first started. I love it. It's great. It's especially during that spring period when you've got that good weather and you're outside and you're working out there. It's it's good. I love it.
So there's a few companies around you could be working for. Why do you like working for GLG?
I have worked for a couple of companies as well. So it's GLG has been great since I've started. It's as I was saying, it's I suppose in that turf management side of thing, they're reasonably young as far as the maintenance goes. So for me, it was being able to come in and I suppose help build that brand and that side of it up, as well as having, like I was saying earlier, having the knowledge and the contacts to get people in that I know are good workers and do a good job. GLG, everything that I've sort of brought up, you know, when you work at some other companies, they'll go, yeah, yeah, no worries. And then it's sort of out the door. You don't hear about it again, but it's always taken on board. You know, that they're always listening. Obviously not everything gets across the line, which is what happens at any company, but yeah, I suppose they're always willing to help. They're, at every department, like, they're always willing to help to achieve the best outcome, which is not always what I've had at other companies. Like, you might ask for a bit of help from one other department and they'll be a bit shirty that you want to take some of their employees or some of their equipment, whereas here it's always been, yep, go for it, or we'll work in with you, we'll do this, you do that sort of thing. Yeah, it's been great, to be honest. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually have to say, even I worked for GLG for 3 months as a team leader of a small depot of 18 staff. Yeah. Look, I actually took on too much work, so I could only do it for 3 months, and I said, look, it's too much. I can't do full-time work and the podcast and create this job board. But I have to say, I think it starts at the top and comes down, because Troy, the CEO, is really supportive. Like, he's been so supportive of my projects. You know, whether that's the podcast or whether that's the Hort people. And I definitely get a really good vibe from the culture with GLG. I think it's a great place to work.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yep, same. I feel exactly the same way. And I've felt like that sort of straight away. Whenever I've started a new job, you have that hesitancy of the first day. You don't know what's coming up. But I never really had that. I was always sort of, I want to dive in and get straight into it, and away you go. So it was, it's been great since I've come here. So
what advice would you give to anybody who's listening to this and thinking, oh, maybe I should pivot into turf, or maybe they're, you know, just starting their career and they're like, oh, maybe turf is the course for me?
Yep. And I don't think it's, I suppose, as far as, like, and I'm only going off the knowledge when I was younger too. I didn't even know about a turf management apprenticeship. I didn't even know it was a thing. So it's not really very well advertised, because obviously you've got your main big building industries people want to go to because they see dollar signs and their eyes light up. But like, if you love working outdoors like me, if you're involved in sport and you want to be involved in it somehow while you're working, this is perfect for you. It is hard. Like any turf manager would tell you, it's hard at the start, because as an apprentice the money's not great, which I'm assuming it would be the same in any sort of sector.
Well, you don't pay for your course.
Yeah, yeah. So, give it a go. The worst thing that can happen is you don't like it and you find something else, but I guarantee if you come into it and you're in the right company, you will like it. Yeah.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've come to the end of the episode, and there's always one final question I'd like to ask guests. It doesn't have to be on topic. It can be about absolutely anything in the world. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
Probably, but nothing comes to mind at the moment.
It's funny how this is the question that trips everyone up. All the technical questions, no worries.
Yeah, not really. No, not specifically. It's more to, I'm happy to help anyone out. If anyone needs any information about anything and wants to get in contact, that's fine. I'm always happy to help out, so.
We'll have your contact details. Maybe we'll put your LinkedIn in the show notes.
Yeah, that's fine. Yep. Perfect.
Great. So if you're not going to say something for anything else you'd like the listeners to know about, maybe I'll take this opportunity.
Yeah, go for it.
I think you were talking about people don't know about it as a career. I think it's not even just that. I think it's that people who are passionate about plants often have this weird thing about turf. It's just like, it's evil, it has no place anywhere. And I think that there is a nuanced discussion to be had about, okay, where are we going to put grass, where are we going to put it, where do we need it, where do we not need it. But I think people need to readjust their perception around turf, because it creates a very much a positive for our society, like, especially in terms of just the recreation aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there was a big push years back when we were in the drought for people to go to the synthetic fields, but I'm not sure if you've stood in the middle of one of them in summer, but you'll nearly melt when you're on those. So they're extremely hot, and they can actually raise the temperature of the surrounding area by a little bit, whereas the natural turf lowers it. So there's benefits definitely to the natural turf. And if everyone goes to synthetic turf, then I don't have a job. So,
yeah, just installations. It's called the urban heat island effect. It's not good.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Definitely not. Mm. Like we've got a few, like we maintain a few synthetic fields out here as well, just grooming and things like that. And you can during summer, they're sweltering hot in the middle of them. They've got their benefits, obviously. Like I was saying earlier, with the soccer fields, as far as having one to train on and one to play on, which is a good idea. But yeah, there's pros and cons to everything, I suppose.
Yeah, no, let's just do it like our ancestors did today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for a great chat, Marcus.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
There's a lot of talk on social media about converting turfed areas into wildlife gardens, and I'm all for it if that's your passion. I don't think anybody's advocating for turning sports fields into habitat gardens, but I also don't want you to let the anti-turf messaging discourage you from making a career change if this episode resonated with you. Sports turf, and the soil beneath it, is habitat to all sorts of stuff that you won't notice unless you're paying attention. Next time you go down to your local park, have a look at the insectivorous birds pecking at critters in the grass. If all of this sounds alright, check the show notes for a link to send your resume to GLG. There's a good chance you live within commuting distance to one of their Aussie depots.